This is Chris Everard broadcasting the Sunday special edition of The Truth Frequency. My special guest today is Max Egan from Australia. And before we meet Max, who's sitting ready on the sidelines, I'd like to play you this special report which I made about COINTELPRO, J. Edgar Hoover, and the Black Panthers. And we'll pick up Max Egan after this segment.
Violence in America today is not caused by the war. It's not caused by repression. There's no romantic ideal involved. Let's recognize these people for what they are. They're not romantic revolutionaries. They're the same thugs and hoodlums that have always plagued the good people.
Now, I don't need to tell you that Richard Nixon was a complete arsehole. As Monty Python said, Nixon went into hospital and he had an arsehole transplant. And the next day, the arsehole rejected him. And the chief of the FBI at the time of the Nixon years was J. Edgar Hoover. Who was J. Edgar Hoover? He was a cross-dressing, strange homosexual man. There's even photographs of J. Edgar Hoover with his main assistant, who was his lover. He was a younger man who J. Edgar Hoover actually promoted through the ranks of the FBI. The whole system is completely and utterly corrupt. Always has been. And if we don't do something about it, it always will stay corrupt. Now, before the Patty Hearst situation, the FBI had started a campaign, and it was called the Counterintelligence Program, COINTELPRO. And their job was to monitor a group called the Weathermen. And the Weathermen were rich kids who'd hijacked the Student Democratic Party, and the FBI spent taxpayers' money monitoring what the Weathermen were going to do, whether the Weathermen were going to plant bombs, whether the Weathermen were some kind of real threat to Nixon and all the puppet presidents. But the COINTEL program, which involved Gordon Liddy and other FBI agents, while they monitored the Weathermen, who were rich kids who'd hijacked the student movement, the FBI were assassinating the Black Panthers. Who were the Black Panthers? They were led by Fred Hampton. And Fred Hampton was a great, great speaker.
I joined the FBI in 1969. And frankly, coming from my background, there were very few things, if any, that were more honorable. I was assigned to the Squad 47, more commonly known as the Weatherman Squad. With respect to the Weathermen, we had to decide whether or not these were real serious threats to the internal security of the United States. Were they really going to bomb public buildings and try to throw over the government? Or were they just a bunch of talkers? And as they progressed, they earned the respect of the Bureau, respect, I say, in terms of being a potent threat.
The police harassment crescendoed. Our apartments were regularly ransacked. Our cars vandalized. Our comings and goings monitored and recorded. We began to vary our meeting and sleeping patterns after the pigs broke down the door of a fifth-floor walk-up after midnight, terrorized three comrades, and hung Terry upside down by his ankles out the window. It was all bad, of course, but we knew, too, that even here, we were enjoying the privilege of our skin. We were being pursued and beaten, true, but our Black Panther comrades were being targeted and assassinated.
Once Richard Nixon was elected president and was inaugurated in January of 1969, we were targeted, bam, 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 by a very sophisticated, advanced counterintelligence program, at the same time by very crude and violent police.
This pattern of harassment is going on against the Black Panther Party across the country. On Friday, the Watts office of the Black Panther Party was bombed and demolished. Last week, the Des Moines office was bombed. They can't stop anything we're doing as a legitimate political organization. So they come in and shoot us and shoot tear gas in office and drag people off to jail like they've lost their minds.
Clearly, the FBI had decided by the end of 69 the Black Panther Party was going to be wiped out. It took a little longer, but that was the approach.
The SDS National Office was located just a few blocks down Madison Street from the Panther Chicago office, and we worked very closely with them.
I got to know some of the members of the Black Panther Party, and particularly Fred Hampton.
Because we don't think that people have been found.
He was a wonderful speaker, and every time he would speak in Chicago, there would be huge crowds, and he inspired people tremendously. And I believe that's why he had to be killed by the United States. They knew that he was one of those people who could be a leader on a very important, profound, and wide level. And they set out to kill him, and they did it. And it's been documented.
So we say, we always say the Black Panther Party, that they can do anything they want to us. We might not be back. I might be in jail. I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you can remember I said, with the last words on my lips, that I am a revolutionary.
In Chicago today, two Black Panthers were killed as police raided a Panther stronghold.
Police arrived at Fred Hampton's West Side apartment at 4:45 this morning. They had a search warrant authorizing them to look for illegal weapons. The state's attorney's office says that Hampton and another man were killed in the 15-minute gun battle which followed.
The pigs murdered our deputy chairman, Fred Hampton, while he lay in bed. Their lies, their arguing to the people can't bear up to the evidence that we have that they murdered our deputy chairman in cold blood as he lay in his bed asleep.
The Panther Party organized tours of the apartment that they were in when they were murdered. And I went with a group of people from the SDS National Office, which was a couple of blocks away.
Don't touch nothing, don't move nothing, because we want to keep everything just the way it is.
It was a scene of carnage. It was a scene of war. You see this door ridden with bullets, not little bullet holes, but shattered.
The room where the first brother, Mark Clark, was murdered at.
You walk through a living room into the bedroom, and there's a mattress soaked in his blood, red blood down the floor.
And so what we can see is that the co-intel program from the FBI was assassinating the Black Panthers, it was monitoring the weathermen, and it still goes on to this day. Except now there's the internet, now there's Facebook, now there's social media websites, and people who post information about the New World Order, they get monitored just the same as the weathermen, but this time it's done electronically. Stay with us. We've got a break coming up after this little piece of music. We've got Max Egan live from Australia. You are listening to the Sunday edition of The Truth Frequency. My name is Chris Everard, and I'm joined for the rest of the show live from Australia by Mr. Max Egan. Max, can you hear me?
Certainly can, Chris. Thanks for asking me on the show again, brother.
Well, it's a great pleasure, Max. Since you were on the show a couple of weeks ago, what I've done is I've done quite a lot of research about Ayers Rock, and unfortunately, you know, what I've found is that we were discussing, you know, the plight of the Aborigines in the last show, and I don't know whether you're aware of it, Max, but I discovered over this last week or so that there's been nuclear contamination of some of the sites which the Aboriginal people considered really secret and really, you know, special to them. And I want to say to the listeners that the British government, Her Majesty's government, are responsible for mass contamination of vast areas of the outback of Australia. And some of the areas that were chosen for doing nuclear tests, and you can look this up on the internet, you know, this is all documented. There's also a brilliant book which I can recommend, which is called Poisoned Rain. That's Poisoned Rain, R-E-I-G-N, as in the reign of a monarch. And what Her Majesty's government did is that they basically targeted these areas where the Aboriginal people used to gather for, you know, their gatherings, and you know, these were places which were considered very sacred. And in the 1950s, there were nuclear blasts, but not only were there nuclear blasts, but there was toxic material actually either buried, or what I found, which is very, very strange, in the middle of the outback, in the middle of nowhere, in these Aboriginal sacred places. They actually scattered toxic waste on the surface of the ground. Now, I want to ask you, Max, did you know that that kind of thing had been going on in the outback of Australia since the 1950s?
Yeah, absolutely. The Maralinga test site, it's been this ongoing problem that we've had for a long time, and they've done an incredible amount of damage out there. They actually covered the whole east coast of Australia with all of the dust from those test sites last year. There was a dust storm, and it blew right across Sydney, right across Brisbane, virtually the whole east coast of Australia, and it all came from the centre there, from the Maralinga test site. And yeah, look, they've gone to an incredible amount of precision in the way they've done all of this. I mean, it isn't just random that they choose these places. You know, that they've gone to an enormous amount of effort to wipe out all the Aboriginal lore from any trace of existence. This is why they covered the songlines when they first arrived, and why they're now building this gas hub right at the mouth of the Rainbow Serpent. They could build it anywhere along the coast if they really need to build it at all. But they choose this incredibly sacred site to do it. And there's a reason for all of this.
Can you tell us what the rainbow serpent is in the Aboriginal culture?
The rainbow serpent traces the songlines. The rainbow serpent is their lore. It's everything. I mean, when I was explaining on the last show that we did how the songlines actually function, when the Aboriginal race was born, or the original race, we call them the Origini people, they were actually born in an area called Tweed Valley. It's the Green Cauldron, it's known as. That was the birthplace of their race. And the first songs that they sang in a meeting place in what is now Byron Bay, in a Bora ring there. Excuse me. And what they used to do is, like, when they discovered something about reality, they came in contact with a new bird or a new insect or a new plant or a new anything, they would create lore about that plant or that bird or that animal. They would create a song, they would create artwork, and they would create a dance. So the next people that they met, they could convey what they'd experienced to these people, because language was that was their language. I mean, the Aboriginal language, there's 70 different nations here, and they all speak sort of kind of different languages. So they used to convey everything through their lore. And as the race moved out across Australia, It followed these song lines, and these song lines trace the sides and the center of the rainbow serpent. And they start in Byron Bay. Byron Bay is the tail of the serpent, and it goes right across the country to James Price Point. And it actually defines the Aboriginal lore and everything they know about creation as they experienced it. That's all encoded into the song lines. And the song lines are their lore. That is the law of creation. That is the law of understanding of all of reality and all that exists within reality for the Aboriginal people. Very, very sacred and very, very profound when you really think about it. And even back then, they were using the triad. They were using the song, the dance, and the art. Everything's always in triads, you know, Father, Son, Holy Ghost, even in trust law, you know, grantor, beneficiary, trustee. Everything is always in triads, and it's very, very significant that it always is. So, but even the Aboriginal law was in triads, and even the path of the rainbow serpent has three paths to cover the whole serpent.
Wow. So there is basically 70 languages amongst the Aboriginal people.
Well, yeah.
Are there any official figures, Max, for, you know, when the settlers first arrived? Are there any official figures that give us some idea of how many Aboriginal people were living in Australia before the settlers really, you know, came in and invaded the land?
Look, it's very difficult to get figures on that. The Aboriginal people themselves don't even know. There were lots of tribes. It's just very, very difficult to find out. But they certainly drove a lot of them into very bad places and allowed them to die. I mean, in Tasmania, the Aboriginal people of Tasmania, that's the only actual case of genocide that exists in the world. They were completely and utterly wiped out by the British colonies. That's the first time a race has ever been completely wiped off the face of the earth. And that was the Tasmanian Aboriginal. The last Tasmanian Aboriginal died around the turn of the last century.
Mm-hmm. Was that at the turn between the 19th and the 20th century?
No, back, between the 19th and the 20th. Yeah, around about there, 1920 or somewhere around there. I'd have to look up the date, but,
And there is, absolutely documented that there's not a single original Tasmanian indigenous person left on the planet. Is that the case?
That's the case, yes.
Wow.
Yeah, it's the only race. I mean, they've tried to exterminate races, but there's always some bloodline or some remnant left, but that there is none of the Tasmanian Aboriginal. They're completely gone.
Hmm. Well, what I did is I played some segments to start off today's show. And one of the segments has Gordon Liddy, who was a former employee of the FBI. And they had the counterintelligence program, which was funded. Millions of dollars were stolen from people's paychecks. And J. Edgar Hoover was a cross-dresser. He was homosexual. There's even photographs of J. Edgar Hoover, who was the boss of the FBI, and he was a Freemason, and he was dressed as a woman. And these photographs exist in biographies of J. Edgar Hoover. And the reason I played those segments, Max, is because it just proves that the African Americans have been under the same kinds of pressures by the Illuminati elite. And the FBI COINTEL program was really an assassination program. And they were assassinating the people like Fred Hampton of the Black Panthers, who could draw a crowd and who could give great speeches that motivated people. And one of the questions I've got, we have got a break coming up soon, Max, is has there ever been a politically active, publicly known Aboriginal person in Australia?
Look, there's been a couple that have, kind of tried to do it, but I mean, I think that they've all been bought and paid for to begin with. There was the tent embassy that was outside Canberra for a while. That was a decent attempt to say, hey, give us a voice. You know, they had a tent sitting on the front of Canberra and the front of Parliament House and said, well, it's our land, we can camp here. And that was the tent embassy for the original people. But a lot of them, they keep trying to go down the path of law, and they keep trying to go down the path of working within this political system. And I think that it's completely corrupt, and there's no way of actually operating within this system. The system is designed to preserve itself. Another interesting thing about the Black Panthers, someone who had a very, very loud voice and could pull a very, very large crowd, and who was very, very supportive of the Black Panthers and who seemed to suddenly mysteriously die, was Jimi Hendrix. I think people should look into that as
absolutely.
Well.
Okay, now we've got a break coming up, everyone. You're listening to the Sunday edition of The Truth Frequency. I'm live with Australia with Mr. Max Egan. Do not touch the dial. You stay there. Welcome back to the Sunday edition of The Truth Frequency. I'm sorry, I crashed into the ads before the break. And what I want to do is I want to demonstrate to you an Aboriginal thunder machine. If you've never heard of one of these before, it's quite amazing. So I've got it here. This is like a modern version of it. I think it was made out of animal skin, wood, and bone, and this one's sort of made out of paper mache, but it still does the same thing. So this is the sound of a thunder machine here. Can you hear that?
Yeah, that's very interesting. I'll have to check up with some of my friends about that one.
Whoa. I've also got an Aboriginal rain stick. Now, were rain sticks something that the Aborigines really used, or is that just a tourist thing, Max?
I think it's more of a tourist thing, a rain stick.
Oh, is it really?
Most of their instruments are very very basic and like swinging wood and stuff like this, like a bulroora or a yidaki or what people would call a didgeridoo. And, you know, very, very earthy, all of their stuff, you know, rattles, rasps, percussion instruments. They were very particular about which gender played which instrument as well. Like, you'd never find a female didgeridoo player.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I've never seen that.
Apparently the circular breathing is quite bad for women, so it's something that only men
do. I see. Yeah, I've actually recorded a whole album of didgeridoo music with a French guy. He's never been to Australia, and I'm not sure whether he's ever met an Aboriginal didgeridoo player, but he's just got a natural talent for it.
Yeah,
and he bought
wonderful instruments.
Yeah, yeah. Now, he showed me how to do the circular breathing. He showed me how to get just like a basic drone out of it. And the amazing thing about didgeridoos is that it kind of, after you've done it for a while, you've got this kind of vibration kind of sensation in your chest and in your lips.
Yeah.
And if
yeah.
you do it for like a couple of hours, it numbs your lips slightly.
Oh, very
it's
much.
Like your body becomes like the kind of resonant acoustic chamber of the actual didgeridoo itself.
Yeah, they're quite an amazing instrument. They're quite a healing instrument as well. They set up some very, very calming frequencies and very calming sound waves around you, and they'd often use them for healing people. They call them yidakis. That's the original name for them. Yidaki. Y-I-D-A-K-I.
Okay, is didgeridoo not an Aboriginal word?
No, it's a white man's word.
I see. Oh, yeah. Well, see, this is why I do these broadcasts, Max, because you find out all of this fascinating stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Now, they call them yidaki. That's the original yidaki. Name for them. Yeah, yidaki.
Okay, now, in the last week or the last 10 days, some of the research which I've turned up, one of the interesting things that I found is that the language of the Aboriginal people, or some of the languages, because you said that there was about 70 languages that they use, what we're dealing with is some of the most ancient phonetic and syllable kind of sounds that mankind knows of. And there is an area of research called linguistic anthropology. And I came across this page during this week. And I just want to read you what it says. It says that Aboriginal languages may be much older than people hitherto thought. A linguistic anthropologist in Australia says that some of the Aboriginal languages originated as far back as the end of the last ice age. Now, the end of the last ice age was 13,000 years ago. 13,000 years ago. And I'm just reading from this website. It says, this challenges existing thinking, which suggests that Aboriginal languages developed from a proto-language that spread through Australia 5,000 to 6,000 years ago. The key to the new hypothesis is prehistoric Australia's single landmass, when New Guinea and Tasmania were still attached. And the linguistic anthropologist is Dr. Mark Clendon. And I did some further reading this week, and it looks to me as if, you know, they were already using phonetics and proper syllables 13,000 years ago.
Yeah, well, that wouldn't surprise me at all. It wouldn't surprise me at all. I believe that mankind to be like millions of years old. It's quite possible. It's very conceivable that we're actually that old. And there has been stuff found, rock carvings and things that could be dated back to 400,000 years. They don't tell you this. There is suggestion in mainstream sources that Aboriginal culture goes back 40,000 years. They say it goes back a lot longer than that, and there's rock carvings which have been dated to 400,000. Nothing would surprise me at all.
Okay. Well, the next thing, I think we're getting a little bit of echo, Chris. Can you hear it, or is our signal
okay? I don't hear it on my end, but keep going, and I'll make some adjustments here if I hear it.
Okay. Now, the other area that really fascinates me, Max, is Kimberley in Western Australia. Now, we didn't have really a lot of time in the last show to really discuss it. I want to tell the listeners that there is a foundation. It's called the Joseph Bradshaw Foundation. And what they did is that they went round and they recorded using drawings. And I think they used a kind of, you know, kind of brass rubbing kind of technique. And they recorded what are known, what I believe are known, as the Wanginas. And this is in Kimberley in Western Australia. Now, the Wanginas are very curious figures because they have huge sort of circular eyes with kind of rays of light, you know, sort of emanating from their skulls. And these Wanginas seem to me to be extraterrestrial. I mean, they don't seem to be normal human kind of markings on the rock. And the Joseph Bradshaw Foundation have done a fantastic job actually recording all of the Wanginas in Kimberley. And in my film Secret Space Volume 2, I show a facsimile of one of these rock markings. And what do you have? Is you have a kind of space-suited kind of large being, like a humanoid being in a spacesuit, and emanating from his forehead, you have like a kind of beam, and at the end of that beam of light or energy or whatever it is, you have, you know, some kind of strange design. Below him, there could be a crop circle, looks roughly like a crop circle. And there's a kangaroo fleeing, running away from this spacesuited character. In the bottom right-hand corner of this rock art, there are two characters, one male and one female, and they don't have Aboriginal facial features. In natural fact, their profiles look very much like European kind of profiles. They don't look Aboriginal at all. And this entire sort of curious scene is encircled by a giant snake, which encircles this rock art. And that's only one of many, many hundreds of different fascinating pieces of rock art at Kimberley. Now, Max, the question I've got is basically, in a nutshell, what are the Wanginas? And are they, you know, do they play some special role with the Aboriginal people?
Look, I have an enormous respect for the Aboriginal people, and I would prefer to actually bring an Aboriginal person on to tell you the story. It's not my place to convey their lore. I've just been actually adopted into the tribe from the Kimberley, the Noongar people, actually. I'm going over to the Kimberley next month. I could probably, while I'm over there, I could probably get an elder to come on the show with me. And to tell you about their lore themselves. This is just a personal thing for me. I have an enormous respect for these people, and I don't feel it's my place to convey my interpretation of their lore. It would be better for them to give it to you firsthand.
Well, the thing about ancient rock art is that I've been around the world, you know, sort of filming it for all the documentaries which I've been making. And in some places, unfortunately, I've had a few emails from people sending me JPEGs of ancient rock art that's been graffitied over. Some of the graffiti is modern, but some of it's old graffiti, and it was placed there by Catholic priests who were running missionaries.
Yeah, you'll find a lot of that around the place here. And look, there are reports of their sky brothers. There are reports of sky people, star people, light brothers. There are even reports of a reptile race that lives underground. There are all sorts of things that exist in Aboriginal legend. So I would happily get some of the elders to come onto the show and talk to you about it, though.
Yeah, that sounds great. I think the thing I've sort of discovered over the period of making my films is that there seems to be very close parallels between the creation myths of the Aborigines and the creation myths of the North American Indians.
Well, there are.
And
absolutely.
Yeah, I'll give you one example. There was a period in the history of the Hopi where there was some kind of big cataclysm on the surface of the planet, and the Hopi found refuge underground. And they were summoned underground, and they were looked after, and food was given to them by what they call the ant people.
Yeah. They're
this sort of subterranean race, and it's fascinating that you say that the Aborigines also have that in their mythology as well.
Well, it's really interesting as well. The ant people, and they call them the Anastasi, I believe, and this is very, very similar to Anunnaki. When we look back through the ancient legends and some of Sitchin's work, whether you believe his work or not, it's interesting that he refers to a race called the Anunnaki, who were miners. And in Sitchin's work, if you really look at it, what you find is that who came to Earth were the Elohim, and they brought the Anunnaki with them. And the Anunnaki were the miners. The Elohim were Enlil and Enki and those sorts of gods that resulted in lines such as Ra and Thoth and all of this crew, you know, who the Greek knew as Hermes. Thoth is Hermes. I mean, it's all interrelated. You'll find these legends in all cultures, and they all refer to the same group of people. They just have different names for these people. And the ant people that are referred to by the Hopi, these sound very much like what we get reported these days as the Greys, the alien Greys. Very, very interesting, the whole thing, actually.
Yeah, it is. It's like, you know, there's so much there that isn't sort of, it's not really covered on the mainstream media.
Well, no, it's not. Seen, yeah. But these alien greys, yeah, are very much like ant people. They've got these large eyes like you would if you lived underground. You've got the Hopi talking about the Anastasi, which is very, very close to Anunnaki. Actually, I think Freeman from Freeman TV talks about this on one of his broadcasts. We had a big discussion about it when he was out here last year. And, yes, it's all very, very interesting, you know. I mean, and I think it's great that people look at all of these things, because I think it's important that people understand how this matrix works and how this whole control system works. But what I'm finding, unfortunately, with a lot of people is it's almost like reading a spy novel for them. It's like watching, getting new installments of their favorite TV show. A lot of people want to know about the intrigues of the grand conspiracy, if you will, but a lot of people are not looking at what's actually going on around them. And we're in a pretty desperate situation on this planet with what's going on with the fracking and the mining. We've got all these different groups, like here in Roxby Downs, we've got the Let's Save the Roxby Downs group. In Kimberley, we've got the Let's Save the Kimberley group. In Byron, we've got the Let's Save the Whales group. We've got the Lock the Gate Anti-Fracking group. We've got all of these groups, and this is the same globally. We've got global little groups addressing little problems, and these are all big problems in their own right, but they're all actually symptoms of the one problem, and the one problem is the system itself. And what's really going on when I look at it is we've got a whole group of public servants who have decided to take over the mansion. We've got the servants running the mansion because we're out partying in the yard and we're not noticing what's going on in the house. And these guys are smashing the dishes and they're fouling the carpet and they're selling the Rolls Royce and they're doing all the things that we don't want them to do. And they're our servants. And I think that's something that we really, really need to look at in everything that we do when we present this information to people that is exposing the grand conspiracy, which is important for people to know how it works. We absolutely need to be getting their attention focused on what's going on around them and the power that they have to pull their servants into line and save this planet. Because if we continue to focus on the historical causes of the problem, we're going to find ourselves in a position where it's too late to save what's going on now. And I don't wish to spread fear amongst people or anything, but what I'm seeing on the planet is Agenda 21 being pushed very, very hard, and people are just not looking at it. Everyone's saying how bad it's getting, and they're looking at the reasons it's got this way, but they're not concentrating on what the fix is. And the fix is for people to understand that they're free, to realize that they're free, to realize that their servants have taken over the mansion, and it's time that we hold them accountable for their actions.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And the other things that I researched in the last 2 weeks since you last on my show is this very, very curious installation that's sort of at the heart of Australia. And it's been there for quite a long time, and that's called Pine Gap.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, some of the things that I read about what was going on at Pine Gap, just tell you that there's several documents that have been published that say that Pine Gap, which is this big facility that's got a big fence around it, it's a very high security facility, it's out of bounds to members of the public. Some of the documents which I unearthed from the Freedom of Information Act in America suggest that Pine Gap as a facility is primarily financed by the American CIA.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, have you got any idea, Max, what is going on at Pine Gap with the CIA? What on earth are the CIA doing in the center of nowhere, in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of Australia?
Everything that used to go on at Area 51 is now conducted at Pine Gap. Everybody knows about Area 51. It's a decoy. The real stuff goes on at Pine Gap. Pine Gap is also, I believe, a scalar weapon. This is why Australia has, I mean, we live in a quite a hostile part of the world, really, if you want to look at it. I mean, got Indonesia would love to come in here. There's like six times as many people that live in Indonesia as what there is in Australia. And we're about 20 times bigger than they are. They would love to come here. A lot of people would like to come here. We're one of the most resource-rich countries on earth, and we have a population of 22 million people. We have no armed forces. You know, if we were to go to war with someone, if we were to get invaded, we have enough military to put one soldier every 2 miles around this coast to protect our coastline. So, yeah, people don't come here for a reason. It's very well protected. Australia is extremely well protected, and Pine Gap is one of those major protections. It's a huge underground base, and it's extremely difficult to find out anything about it at all. It's been all sorts of reports of UFO sightings. There's a C-130 lands there full of supplies every day. This is a very small facility above the ground. There's a C-130 arrives there every day. So what's going on there? Some of the things that I've seen when I've been out in the country and near the center of Australia, there was one night, even quite nearby in a place called Bow Desert in Queensland. I was driving along the road with my wife one night, and we saw what appeared to be lightning on the hills in front of us. And it was flickering. It was coming closer across the hills, and we thought that was very strange that it wasn't just dissipating. It wasn't just a flash. It was like a light from the sky. And what appeared out of the clouds was a fireball, a huge red cinder. It looked like a cinder out of a fire, and it was roaring because of the wind. And it came streaking over our heads at about probably 150 feet or 200 feet above the ground. It was about the size of a four-story apartment block. It was quite a large fireball, and it was running horizontal to the ground. It didn't get any higher, and it didn't get any lower, and it just sailed off across the country towards a place called Warwick. And I got home and rang up the radio station and said, hey, you had reports of this fireball? And they said, yeah, we just got about 200 phone calls. Nobody knows what it was. It just continued and went out to sea. And these things have been reported coming out of the center of Australia where they do all these tests, and there's some really, really strange stuff going on around there. And there's a lot of government land surrounding Pine Gap as well, so it's very difficult to even get close to, you know, anywhere near it. So it's a very, very mysterious place.
Yeah, we've got a break coming up very, very soon. But were you aware, Max, that there were reports on the internet that the deepest hole in the Earth's crust existed at Pine Gap?
Yeah. That, I believe, is part of an underground radar and underground antenna facility. I think they have these, they use very, very low frequency, super low frequency radio waves to communicate through the crust of the planet.
Okay, now, everybody, we have a break coming up quite soon. I'm live with Mr. Max Eigen, and this is the Sunday edition of The Truth Frequency. And after the break, we're going to be discussing Agenda 21. We're going to be discussing some solutions for the Aboriginal people. What can we do around the planet to actually make life better for Aboriginal people and for the sovereign nations of North America? Because these people have rights, and they were around a lot longer than we. Then, you know, we're just settlers. We're just sort of squatting their land. So this is the Sunday edition of The Truth Frequency, and my producer is Mr. Chris Geo. I'd like to thank Chris and Cherie for helping me put this show together. And you can actually download versions of this show at enigmatv.com. And Max, what's your website?
My website is thecrowhouse.com.
Thecrowhouse.com. Okay, we've got a break coming up. We'll see you after the break. Welcome back to the Sunday edition of The Truth Frequency, and I'm coming live from Europe, and our special guest is Max Eigen, who's live in Australia. And what I'd like to talk about, Max, is this Agenda 21. During the break, we were just discussing solutions, and it is really necessary that we do have some kind of solutions for people. Now, on previous broadcasts that I've appeared with you, Max, you've discussed this whole situation of trust law and how really the governments, who are meant to be the servants of the people, have picked up the stick, and they're hitting us over the head with all these different taxes. What I always say to people is that if you keep paying taxes, they will keep inventing new taxes for you to pay. And in Europe now, it's getting into a ridiculous situation where there's even a rubbish tax, a trash tax, where they weigh your rubbish bin and then they tax you on it. And now there's also some new taxes coming in as part of the EU Nazi superstate. And what those new taxes are is they are transaction taxes, so that if I transfer some money from your bank account to my bank account or vice versa, there is a tax that's taken directly out of our bank accounts, and we have no control over it whatsoever. Now, one of these new taxes is the carbon tax, which we discussed during the break. Can you just tell us, Max, what the basic lay of the land is with Agenda 21?
Well, Agenda 21 is all about moving people into concentrated areas of civilization, concentrated pockets of people. And they tell us it's to allow nature to flourish in these other areas and to make everything sustainable. But what they don't tell you is what sustainable is. They just want to sustain the system the way it is. They want to sustain their ability to be able to strip mine this planet. And that's what they're doing. Now, they're introducing things such as carbon tax and all of these other taxes, and they're making it impossible for people to live. It's getting so expensive to live, it's ridiculous. There's a man in Brisbane, 75 years old, spent his life working, saved up all of his superannuation and all of his money so that he could retire and enjoy some of the years of his life. Now that he's 75 years old, everything has gone up so much that he's spent all of his money that he saved from his working life just trying to keep his head above water. And now the government has raised his land tax, and so he can't pay that, and so he's being forced to sell his house that he spent his life paying off. And the government will happily throw him on the trash heap, move him into public housing in a city. And this is what they're doing. They're making it impossible for people to survive. And these are our servants. These are people that we elect to act on our behalf to ensure that we have a viable future. And what they are doing is they are introducing more and more taxes and enslaving the people to more and more bills and more debt in order to control them so that they can sell off the rest of the country, sell off the rest of the planet. And that's what they're doing. The earth is being strip mined, and they're destroying the water table. All the fracking is destroying the water table, which will make it impossible for people to live in the country. And I'm asking people to look down the track a little bit. Look at 5 years into the future or 10 years into the future, and you're not going to have a water table in the country, so you're not going to be able to live there. You're going to have to live in the city. And people who already live in the cities may be blind to some of this. They may think, oh, well, what are these country people complaining about? I've got my stereo and I've got my internet and I've got my nightclub that I go to and I can buy my latest exploding shoes if I want to and dye my hair pink if I want to. So I don't care. I can go to the supermarket. But what's happening is they're all being fed genetically modified food. They're all being taken further and further away from nature and further away from their connection to the planet. And the planet is being destroyed. And if we don't do something about it and start holding our servants accountable, we're going to be heading for a very, very bad state. Now, all of my shows, everything that I've been talking about energy. I've been talking about people's need to overcome the fear within themselves. I've been talking about trust law. I've been talking about all of these things because I want people to know how powerful they are. We really are powerful. We just have to understand that we're powerful. As far as trust law goes, I'm trying to get people to understand trust law again because I want them to understand the power that they have. Unfortunately, I'm getting letters from people saying, you know, can you give me a letter of remedy? What's some letter that I can write that I can give to the government to make them leave me alone? Well, you know, there's no form you can fill out or nothing you can hand to government, no piece of paper that will free you unless you know that you are free to begin with. That's the thing. People have to know who and what they are and be able to stand in that power and realize that the people we are dealing with are public servants. We are the public. We are the people. We hold all the cards. It's just that our servants have taken over the mansion and we're too scared to do anything about it. I've been very, very much under attack lately for saying these sorts of things and suggesting that we need to be unified as a global family. People are saying, oh, one world government. Well, no, I don't think we need any government, but I think we need to respect each other. And once we do respect each other and we can stand in that, we can eliminate all of these problems.
Absolutely. And, you know, if we want to discuss solutions now, one of the suggestions which, you know, crossed my mind during this last week was looking at all of the historical data of the Aborigines is that I think every single person, even Her Majesty, would agree that Ayers Rock and the area around Ayers Rock is really an Aboriginal homeland. It's certainly a sacred place. Now, do the Aboriginal people have a homeland which is recognized by the Australian Crown?
Well, there is Arnhem Land, and there is certain areas of South Australia and Western Australia, which unfortunately are highly polluted with radioactivity now, but Arnhem Land is still there. There are areas in Australia where natural law still prevails, Aboriginal law still prevails. But Australia is a unique country in as much as it's the only country that the Crown ever touched that they still don't have any claim to. There is no document that can be tabled. There is no treaty that can be tabled. There is nothing to show that the Crown has any ownership to this land. So all we need really is a lot of very awake and very enlightened people to come to this country and to treaty with the original people of this country and to claim their sovereignty within these lands and within this country, because it's here. It's here that we can do it. We've got 22 million people in this country, less than in one city in the United States, and the land is still owned by the original inhabitants of the land. We just need the strength of numbers to be able to stand in that power and bring about positive change. And I don't wish to overthrow any governments or anything. I just wish to put them back in their rightful position as the trustees of our society, because that's all they are. They are public trustees. They are public servants. And they're not acting in a way that the public is benefiting from, or anything is benefiting from. And all of the problems that we face on this planet can be attributed to our failure to hold our servants accountable for their actions. And I think that's what we have to do. And Australia is a perfect place to do it because this, as I said, is still owned by the original people. The Crown has no claim to this country.
That is absolutely, you know, that's mind-blowing information. And I'd like to ask you, Max, there's been a few referendums over the last few years. Is the Queen, you know, popular? Is she, you know, a fit head of state and people have voted? And it always seems to come out within 1% of whether, you know, people should keep the Queen as the head of state for Australia. And it's usually by a very narrow margin. We're told, oh, yes, the Australian people have chosen the Queen. Now, we're going to come up for a break fairly soon. I just want to ask you in a nutshell, is that fixed? Is the Queen really popular?
Well, it's the thing is the Queen isn't popular, but people understand that the Queen is actually the defender of the common law. And what our governments are doing with this referendum, they're not really interested in whether you like the Queen or not. What they're interested in is being put into a position where they can enact their own law to control you by. That's what it's about. We have no Bill of Rights in this country. We don't even have a valid constitution in this country. This is essentially a penal colony. And the government is attempting to remove all of the common law rights of the people and put themselves into a position where it's a virtual dictatorship. I mean, it is already, but they're trying to make it more open, and that's what all this is about. Even the carbon tax referendum. And Julie Gillard put out a referendum to see who wants carbon tax, and everyone voted no. So she put out another one, and everyone voted no. So she put out another one, and everyone voted no. So she's now preparing another one. They just keep going until they get the numbers. They don't listen with these referendums. It's all fiction. It's all a joke. And all they're trying to do is remove the common law rights of the people. But a lot of Australians understand that. They understand the Queen is actually the defender of the common law. They just can't understand why the situation has got to what it is. And that's because there are two crowns, as I've spoken about before.
Well, now we're going to come into a break now. I want everybody to stay with us because we're going to be discussing some solutions for the Aboriginal people and for the world population in general. This is the Sunday edition of The Truth Frequency. My name is Chris Everard. We're live with Mr. Max Egan. Here's the break. This is the Sunday edition of The Truth Frequency. My name is Chris Everard. If you've stumbled across this broadcast, then you can download our 128K stereo versions of our shows. There's an enormous archive at truthfrequencyradio.com. And there's also an archive of my shows, which you can download at enigmatv.com. That's the Enigma channel. That's E-N-I-G-M-A-T-V. And our guest for this special show is Mr. Max Egan. And Max, would you like to tell people what your website is, please?
My website is thecrowhouse.com.
Thecrowhouse.com. Now, when we, you know, sort of started this segment, we were talking about, you know, the song lines and the rainbow serpent. I just want to tell people about dowsing and ley lines. It's a subject which we just sort of briefly covered in the last broadcast, which we did a couple of weeks ago. And a chap in Scotland actually taught me how to douse these electromagnetic lines of energy that go across the surface of the Earth. But they actually change. These lines actually change according to the altitude. And amazingly, there are dowsers who actually sit in the cockpits of little light aircraft, and they try and douse lines while they're flying. And there's an Australian researcher who's done a lot of great work. His name is Bruce Caffey. That's C-A-T-H-I-E, Bruce Caffey. And Bruce has done a lot of work sort of tracing this network of grid energy lines that go across the planet, especially in Australia. Now, when we'd finished the last broadcast, which we did 2 weeks ago, Max, you told me something very, very interesting. And these song lines or ley lines, whatever, you know, terminology you want, you said that the priests, the actual invading priests, the settlers, were very, very aware of these important lines of energy that were sacred to the Aborigines, and they did something with children. Can you sort of say again, live on air, Max, exactly what happened?
Okay, well, what happens? See, the song lines and the ley lines are actually a little different. The song lines actually trace the law of the people, but by interjecting new codes into the song lines, you can actually affect the ley lines, which are the energy lines of the planet, the energy grid of the planet. It's very, very connected. And this is why recently we had an Aboriginal lady called Kerri-Ann Cox come to this particular area of the country. She came all the way over from the mouth of the Rainbow Serpent, right over here to what she calls the land of the rising sun, which is Byron Bay, the most easterly point of the country. And this is where the first borer ring is. And she sang into the borer ring to put a new code into the song line in order to shift the ley lines. I don't know how to read ley lines. I don't know how to douse. I only know what people tell me about these things. But when she did that, very interestingly, there were calls coming in from all over the place saying, oh, the ley lines are moving. What's happened? Someone's changed the ley lines. And it was this lady, Carrie Ann Cox. Now, what happened when the British settlers came here was that they know that, see, because the song line starts in Byron Bay, it starts on the east coast of Australia, it's right here. This is why when the British settlers came here, they had to go to the start of the song line in order to interject a new code into the song line in order to affect the ley lines. Because they know about this stuff. And to prove that they know about it, when they got here, what they did was they got Aboriginal children and they dressed them up in their Sunday best and they made them walk the song lines singing Christian hymns into the song lines. So they sang Western law into this country. Now, this is very profound and it's very, very significant that they would do this. Now, you've got this.
I call that total evil.
Well, you've got this organization, the Catholic Church, the Christian Church, which says that all of this other mumbo jumbo, all this tribal stuff is all black magic. It's all of the devil, all of this sort of stuff. And yet they come here and that's one of the first things they do. So they know all about this. They know how it affects the energy of the planet and they know it absolutely works because otherwise they wouldn't have gone to that much difficulty to do this. I think it's extremely significant because it shows you that all of this is true. That the earth is energetic and everything you feel, it is energetic. Ultimately, when you come down to it, the nature of atoms and everything, it's all about energy. It's all about sound and light frequency. And it's how you can manipulate this sound and light frequency. And the manipulation of this sound and light frequency in order for nefarious purposes is what we refer to as Luciferianism. But people don't understand that that's how it works because they're off looking for the devil. They're off looking for this guy with a pitchfork that the Christian church has presented them with. They've got this whole God versus the devil thing happening when really it's all about the manipulation of energy. That's what it's all about. And it's just simply knowing how sound and light frequencies work. What frequencies certain sigils set up. Now, when you look at a sigil or a symbol of something, how are you interacting with that symbol in realms that you can't perceive, with senses that you don't know you have? That's the question. So that's something that people don't think about. You know, I'm going to give my attention to a peace sign because my intention is peace. Well, your intention may be peace, but how are you interacting with that symbol in higher realms that you can't perceive? Because there are a lot of higher senses that we have. Because only 3% of our DNA is active and our pineal gland is shut down, we don't experience this information. We don't know how to decode this information, but we're still using these senses. We're still interacting with things in ways that we don't know. And this is how we are being manipulated. And it's extremely significant. And they know all about it. And the fact that they did that with the song lines shows that they know all about how this works.
Yeah, they certainly do. Now, in this last 4 minutes of the show, Max, what I'd like to talk about is some kind of modern-day solution. And I've been looking into it and in the last week. I've come up with this idea that maybe the best thing for the Aboriginal people to do is to use the power of the modern media. Now, I know that these are ancient people, but, you know, the Internet is there. It is at the moment, and I believe that we should be using it. And one of the things that strikes me is that if you look at, say, for example, Switzerland or one of these other tax havens like the Cayman Islands, British Virgin Islands, these types of places, you walk down the road and you're walking past these doorways. And each of these doorways has maybe 150 small brass plaques around the doorway. And they have the names of corporations and small businesses and big businesses. And the reason that those plaques are there is because they've been the repository address. They're the registered address of corporations which exist somewhere else on the planet. And, you know, these businesses are registering in Switzerland and the Cayman Islands and other tax havens, because once they've registered their address there, then there are tax advantages. And I see the Aboriginal people as sovereign people. They were there, and it's recognized now by everybody that they had system. They worked together at certain times. They lived in harmony with the seasons. And they are what I call a sovereign people. And there's, you know, 70-odd languages there. And what I would like to say to the Aboriginal people is that you must grasp this modern technology of the internet. And my advice to anyone who's tuning into this broadcast who has contact with Aboriginal people is that there is no reason why the Aboriginal homelands, which are existing right now and are at least recognized, could not be used as a repository, for example, as an Aborigine bank. And you can operate a bank nowadays on the internet. You don't even need a branch, a physical branch. And the reason that I suggest these types of things is because I'd like to see, you know, people all over the world showing their support for the ancient people like the Aborigines, like the Navajo, like the Hopi, like the Blackfoot, you know, the Inuit, all of these ancient people. I would like people all over the planet to show their support and even maybe deposit $1, you know, in the Aboriginal bank. And that would show Her Majesty that there is global support for these ancient people. And, you know, what do you think about the idea, Max?
Well, absolutely. I mean, if you cut off the money supply to the people that are running the planet, then that's going to be a good thing. I think all avenues, need to be explored. Absolutely. I think one of the biggest problems that we're facing is people knowing that they are free. That's the biggest problem that we face. People are too scared to step outside of the box. We're never going to fix anything until people know that they are free and they connect with the people around them. Stop being divided from your neighbours. Stop seeing people as being any less valid than yourself. Realise that we're all in this together, and the big problem we got is our servants are running the mansion. So whatever way, banks, anything we can do to disconnect from this system, I think is a good thing.
Yay. Okay, now we're finishing the show. I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in. My name is Chris Everard. Thank you, Max. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Cherie. And we'll be back next Sunday, 4 p.m. Californian time. My name is Chris Everard. This is the Sunday edition of The Truth Frequency. And good night.